Good morning. I thank Melissa and the Breastfeeding Forum for inviting me to come today. I'm very honored to be here. Actually, as the executive director of our organization, which has a strategic focus to prevent childhood obesity, is kind of how we got into the work that's related to breastfeeding, because we started out with school nutrition standards and trying to get junk foods and sodas and all that out of the schools. And, you know, then we did that and got a law, and then looked, oh dear, they're already overweight when they come to school. And we backed up, and we've been doing studies in childcare settings and what's going on there. And oops, they're already overweight when they get there. And so we've kind of, you know, gone back and breastfeeding. And I'm a public health nurse underneath all of my stuff and my 40 years of working in public health. And so, you know, I feel kind of like it's back to the future. And I am so pleased to be heading up an organization that has such wonderful coalition work going on. And Amelia P. Smythe, who is my staff person, who actually helped put this together. And many of you know Amelia. She's the regional representative from the Western region on the USBC and has worked on the workplace breastfeeding, workplace accommodation for breastfeeding moms. So anyway, I just want to tell you that I'm kind of channeling Amelia here, and that, you know, if there are some detailed questions at the end, I may have to lead you there. But what I did, and a little bit about my background, I have no disclosures, okay. A little bit of background about kind of how we got to where we are in terms of the Public Health Institute, and my role in it. I was a public health nurse, and then ended up an assistant director at Multnomah County Health Department, which is Oregon's largest health department. Did that for many years. Ended up being in charge of our primary care clinic, safety net clinic program that evolved into Care Oregon, which is now the largest Medicaid managed care plan in Oregon. And I ended up somehow becoming the CEO of it. And then I was that. And so I kind of, in my mind, kind of stepped out of my public health world over into this world of insurers and Medicaid and lots of 50 to 60-year-old white men in suits. Don't mean to be disparaging at all, but it was kind of like a very different group of people than I had dealt with in my professional career in public health. They didn't wear Birkenstocks. They didn't have beards. You know, they were just very different guys than I was used to dealing with. So I had to kind of get suited up and go to lots of meetings and try to understand how insurers thought. And they're very bottom-line driven. There's some talk about improving health, but it really is their bottom line. So, and that was also another strange thing for me. But if I was running a quasi-insurance company, I had to worry about our bottom line, too. So, anyway, this just shows a little bit of our, but here we are to the healthy bottom line. And so now in my role at the Public Health Institute, and kind of thankfully, after 7 years of being at Care Oregon and doing that, they ousted me. And all of a sudden, I was like, oh, goodness. And I tell people to get fired at least once in your life is kind of a good thing. You have to kind of go, what does that all mean? And we were experiencing many problems in terms of the financing with Medicaid and increasing utilization and costs, et cetera, and the board, you know, in just kind of panicking, not knowing what to decide, they needed a white man in a suit about 50-some years old who ran insurance companies. And so anyway, you know, kind of let me out of jail, and I ended up getting hired by this little fledgling organization that actually I and a few others from the health department had started a few years back, and we called it Friends of Public Health in those days. And now we've evolved into this Public Health Institute, but trying to very honestly figure out how to sustain and fund this little organization that now was me and one other person. And the board told me, and my job was to bend the tide on childhood obesity and prevent it. And it was like, oh, well, this is interesting, and with basically no money. So then I started thinking, well, who do I know and what can I do? And so I started thinking about, you know, actually some of those guys who had become kind of my friends in from the insurance world, and they sure seemed to have a lot of money, and especially on the private side. And so I thought, you know, they never talk about, think about anything related to prevention. And so after our successful thing in getting the school legislation passed and working on PE and other things and realizing that really there were so many issues related to prevention, and if you really do follow the dollar, who is it? Ultimately, I believe it's the federal government that really, you know, holds the bag at the end when we all hit 65 and we're in Medicare and we've got all these chronic diseases, and we, the people, and our government are the ones who are going to pay those prices to try to fix all these broken people. And but kind of as an intermediary, insurers kind of hold the bag because they've got a lot of people, and we're breaking people really fast upstream and sending them on downstream and saying to hospitals, doctors, and everybody, fix them, and they're saying it costs us a lot of money to do that, and the insurer is the one who kind of is getting the brunt of, you know, seen, and one of the insurers is on my board of directors, and he said, you know, we kind of fit in there with the tobacco company and the oil company CEOs. We have kind of a bad image out there, and he feels kind of like, and what do we do? It's just, it isn't really us, and yeah, they've got their administration, but overall, it's the price of the providers that are kind of driving it up. So he and I started talking about what could we do and how could we draw in insurers into really thinking about prevention, getting them to believe in it a bit. And what Jack said to me was, Mary Lou, we're not so sure we really believe in it. But maybe we do, and it seems to be kind of the thing, and it's not very popular to say you don't believe in it, so, you know, okay, we believe. But he said, as long as it's employer-based, from the private insurance company world, I have to say I'm going to put a bunch of money into this stuff that I'm really, it's kind of down the road a ways before you're going to really see the effects. And guess what? By that time, they've all gone over to Bart at Regents, or they've all gone over to Kaiser, and they all kind of move around as the employers try to get the best deal they can on health insurance for their employees. So he said, kind of the only way I think it'll work is if we lasso everybody into the room and say, okay, we're going to start talking about it together. Because if together we kind of invest in prevention, then, okay, so they're on the Providence Health Plan now, and 2 years later they're on Blue Cross, but some of those on Blue Cross are going to be over here on Providence. And so if we really, you know, it's one of those all boats rise with the tide. So we got to talking, Jack being on my board and responsible with me and the other board members on sustaining our organization. One of the things that we decided was that we would be really bold and not just call them together, but we'd call them together and charge them to come. Now that's that's even more like, okay, we said, but we also kind of went with this kind of prevailing belief that people value what they pay for, and that if we just kind of had a meeting, they'd send some people, and that'd be nice, and then they'd all kind of drift off. So Jack and I went around and talked to all these other CEOs and said, there's dues to join, and this is a great club to join, and this is why you want to join. And we kind of told them that, you know, some of the things that we know are going on out there in health insurance, but how we could help. We could help them because the competition is fierce, but in Oregon, we're also a small state and a little bit different in terms of, you know, everybody kind of knows everybody, and they all go to the same country clubs and all those kinds of things. And so they compete on one hand, but they're also kind of friends on another hand. And that if we did get a small group of them that kind of really did something, and there were some that didn't join the club, they were afraid that they would not look so good in the competitive environment. So we kind of tried to use each one of these barriers as, you know, kind of like, we can help you out on this. And kind of down at the bottom one, they don't like to be seen as the tobacco company executive. They really want to be seen as the good guy, too. So we said, come together with us and band together with public health, and we'll help you be seen as a part of the good guy. Okay, so we had to come up with a name, and so we came up with the Oregon Health Insurers Partnering for Prevention, or OHIP. and they all wanted to be hip. So that's how we came up with, we struggled with something that'd be kind of fun. And we wanted to, like I said, bring them together, help them see that they could benefit financially by doing good with us. And that we asked them for, you know, what seems like a significant amount of money in my book, but it's kind of decimal dust in theirs. So we asked somewhere between $10,000 and $25,000 a year. We asked them for 3 years to make a commitment, and the $10,000 ones were for the smaller Medicaid plans, and the $25,000 was for the larger private plans. And right now we have got, in terms of the coverage of the plans, we don't actually have 85% of the health insurers, but we have the ones that we have cover 85% of the population of Oregon, and the ones that are Medicaid are covering 45% of the Medicaid population. So, and thankfully, Care Oregon is in there. That would be embarrassing if they weren't. So what do they get for their investment? Well, we help them. We said that we work with each plan, and we get to know, we ask them not only for the money, but we ask them for them to designate at least one person, and hopefully two, that would come to the meetings and be part of the collaborative. And we said they could choose who they sent. And so we've kind of got a mixed bag. We've got some medical directors of plans, and some of the big plans, you know, have multiple medical directors. And so we have a medical director. We have, sometimes they have sent their person who's in charge of wellness or a health educator person. Some of them have sent a benefit design person. We said mostly what we wanted was somebody that the upper level management would listen to. So if they came back and said, this is what we're thinking about and what we've been asked to do at the plan level, we wanted somebody who could influence whoever needed to be influenced to either get the data or to be able to make a commitment to a project. And so we said, you know your people better and your organization. And some place like Regents Blue Cross that has more vice presidents than I can count, it's kind of like, you tell us which one you want to send. And from our Providence plan, my board member, Jack Friedman, who's the CEO of the plan, actually came for quite a while because he wanted to kind of show the other plans and that it was a high-level kind of thing. So we do the same things you're talking about in the collaborative with the hospital, that we facilitate connections. We get them to talk about things that ordinarily they wouldn't be talking about, yet we guard their confidentiality when they give us data. We don't, you know, we blind it. We don't say where it's coming from, but we, with their permission, ask if this can be blinded and shared. We draft white papers. One of the things that I had a young MPH physician, Helen Belanca, primary care doc, who worked with us, just went on to another wonderful project with another organization. But what Helen, what I asked her to do was to really take a look at the evidence in the literature and in the area of prevention and trying to look at obesity prevention, especially what is it that, from an insurer point of view, that you could do. And I didn't bring those, and I probably should have, I realized this morning, but if you're interested, I've got cards up here. You can email me, and I'll email them to you. But anyway, she did kind of a background white paper looking at the best evidence out there on, and breastfeeding came up as one of those issues, but there was also things on immunizations. There was ones on injury prevention, and I'm trying to remember the fourth one, but just basically we presented these to the insurer group when we first met and went through them and talked about, we wanted it to be their collaborative effort with them driving the process and them coming up with what they wanted to work on first so that we weren't telling them, but they would be committed then to coming back. And we helped steer it a little bit, honestly. And of course, they chose breastfeeding and as their first one, but we have this list because we want to keep them engaged, and when we solve breastfeeding, then we we can move on to something else. So the other thing that we've learned, and this was kind of accidental in some ways, that the insurers tell us, you know, everybody kind of, when you follow the money, like who influences whom, it's the people who buy the insurance. So it's the large collaboratives or cooperatives or public employers, and so that's what OEB is, the Oregon Educators Benefit Board. They purchase all the insurance for school districts, community colleges, et cetera. So that's a huge group of 165,000 people that they cover. The Public Employee Benefit Board, and also Medicaid is a very big purchaser. And coincidentally, I was asked if I would be willing to join the Oregon Educators Benefit Board, and I did, and kind of wasn't sure why I was there or what I was supposed to be doing, when all of a sudden, talking to the administrator a little bit about some of our work with OHIP and stuff about breastfeeding, and now we have got OEB in our request for proposal for insurers. The insurers have to ask the hospital, kind of step one, is where are they on the steps on baby friendly and how are they going to get there, and that they need to get there within 2 years or they will not be eligible to be under that insurer's coverage. So, you know, but that was some of these things, I guess I'm telling you because they're kind of serendipitous, or I wish I could say I was smart enough to have thought all this out very clearly, and it really wasn't. It was mostly kind of using who I was, who I knew, bits and pieces, and then other smart people kind of saying, oh, but think about this, or sometimes it was just the opportunity. So I'm going to zip through. It is a difficult concept for plans to understand at first, that prevention is important, that they have a role in it, because they're not in the exam rooms of people who are in hospitals, and so they're kind of like us. It's a little hard to get the right people and funds to the table, and you know, we've had some fits and starts with who comes and then they leave their position, or those kinds of things happen. Insurers are risk adverse internally and externally, and so some of this stuff, when I say it, their eyes get big and they go, I don't believe it. But you know, kind of over time, you kind of wear them down and you kind of flatter them and you give them awards. Okay, so we'll get to that at the end. But we bring the evidence-based medical literature, but kind of in this business model that they are in, the business case seems even more important. So listening to the talk about, you know, getting that business case and the research on that, that's really important. And we are kind of a kumbaya state with everybody kind of holding hands and saying, you know, that we've got to work together, knowing that behind the scenes, you know, they've got their swords out. But on the surface, we have what we call Oregon nice, and everybody is very nice, and we just try to kind of keep pretending that we're all acting like that when we go out of the door, too. We also told them that, hey, we can make you collectively look good. We can tell people, look at, the insurers aren't all bad guys. They're really doing something good, and they really like that. Okay. So let's see. So we've been meeting for 2 years. We gave them those four topics. The number one project that after, okay, focus on breastfeeding, Oregon is trying to start a milk bank. And we were struggling for something that the insurers would, you know, be able to kind of do quickly, have a success. And so we decided that the milk bank was a place that they could come together, and we explained to them why it was needed. Our NICUs can't get the amount of human milk that they need, and we got the hospitals involved in telling them that. So anyway, in the end, we have at this moment, through this collaboration, gotten commitments for over $125,000 from these insurers to go to capitalizing the Northwest Mothers Milk Bank. And that's very exciting. And so we had our big, we have an annual awards luncheon, and we had all those insurers either were sponsors of the luncheon or had a table and had all their people there. And so then we had the board of the Northwest Mothers Milk Bank, and we gave them a check. And this is the stuff on why it's important from an insurer point of view. It was a short term. We could show them that there is savings in the first year if you can decrease your necrotizing enterocolitis in your preemies by giving them human milk. And so we used a lot of the research on that and convinced them that, you know, basically The average in Oregon for the surgical neck case is $357,000 of charges. Of course, the insurers pay 50 to 70% of that, but it's still a lot of money. So that's kind of where we are at the moment, but we're looking at things like other things that they can do. And, of course, lactation consultation, and that's Surgeon General's report, pumps and related supplies, donor milk, and really trying to push and say, what are the barriers from the insurer's point of view? So we're looking at that, and how can we help them understand about the Joint Commission core measure and the 10 steps and the breastfeeding and the baby friendly. And we're really talking with them now, and they're kind of intrigued about this idea about reimbursing differential between baby-friendly hospitals and non-baby-friendly hospitals. And so we're pushing that idea. So that's that. I've got my slides back there if you want a copy of them, and I'd be glad to. The other thing is they all got big lobbyists. And so on their agenda, when their lobbyists go lobby, it's all about rates and about all kinds of stuff. So we've been saying to the collaborative, let's have a special meeting and bring your lobbyists, and we will talk about things that are prevention and public health issues that would be, and if we can get them onto some of those issues and even speaking up and coming and testifying, so it isn't just our usual public health friends, but we have some of the big, because they've got big gun lobbyists and pay them lots of money. And so we're working on that, and PE in schools is another really big one, and if we could get them to be helping us by saying why that's important. So that's it.